And you're very welcome to the RT Rugby Podcast. Donal Lennon and Wes Liddy joining me. Bernard Jackman to arrive very soon, we hope, as Leinster stroll to another Pro 14 title. I think it's fair to say stroll is the optimum word here. Too strong for Irish opponents, too strong maybe for the Pro 14 overall. And you would imagine that Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster have already shifted the focus towards Saracens and the Heineken Cup this weekend. Donal, I mean, look, we hoped for a competitive game. I guess it was, you know, in some parts for a reasonable period, but Leinster ultimately, their strength just paid and they managed to pull away at the end without really having to break sweat. It was as simple as that.
Yeah, I think it went along expected lines. I mean, you're talking about Lancaster and Cullen shifting their focus to the Saracens game. I think they had the Saracens game in their mind long before even last weekend. The selection, having the facility to leave Johnny Sexton on the bench, I think was proof positive of that. Look, I think we all felt the game would go exactly the way it did. I mean, you look at how dominant Leinster have been. Just take the Pro 14 alone. They topped their own conference, Conference A. They had 25 points to spare over Ulster. In the other conference, I think Edinburgh and Munster finished 18 points. They finished on level terms, but they were 18 points behind Leinster. 17 matches played, won all 17, played 52 players. A lot of those games were played when I think they had 15 players involved with Ireland in the build-up to the World Cup and during the period of when they were away in Japan. So for literally 2 or 3 months of the season, they had all their frontline players missing. But yet, they have so much trust in the strength and depth. They have so much quality to come in. They're all so comfortable in the roles that have been identified for them that they just they kick on seamlessly. And you know, it's you could almost sense the frustration in, I thought, Ian Henderson's interview after the game. You know, it was almost, oh God, like, how do you beat them? What do you have to do to beat them? Ulster, as you said, started well, but I thought a 22-point margin in the end was a reflection on the way the game went.
Yeah, Bernard, it can be a bit of an Irish thing sometimes to build up, you know, a successful side, person, whatever entity you want to to describe, and then when they actually get to the heights that you have long anticipating, then we try and pick forms or knock them down. But I don't know what you can say about Leinster in the context of the Pro 14 now, because they're just so far ahead and so much better than every other team that they're in a league of their own.
Yeah, they are, and I think it's probably it's good for them, and it rewards them to go and finish the Pro 14 season with silverware. They have been by far the best team. The challenge for them now is to go and prove it in Europe. And it's not a given that, you know, they're the best team in Europe. You know, they're certainly shown elements of why they could be, and their form is really good. But it's a different level, even this weekend against Saracens. And what's if they win that game, looking at the likes of Toulouse and Racing Metro and Claremont, Exeter, you know, it's another level up, unfortunately, and that's the challenge for Leinster, to be able to get out of that mode now, where unfortunately they've been quite comfortable, and bring it to a new level.
Well, it's a huge step up from the Pro 14, Wes, isn't it? Like, it's a huge step up from the Pro 4, the standard of the Pro 14 to the Champions Cup. I don't know, does that say more about Leinster? Does it say more about the Pro 14 itself, or indeed the Heineken Cup? I mean, where do you stand on this one?
Yes, I think it's definitely a step up, and as it should be. And I suppose Leinster probably have had their sights set on Sarries for quite a while since last year. Obviously, the context around the game with Sarries is a little different. I suppose you would have liked to have seen them in the form they were in last season going up against Leinster. But, I mean, they have lost a number of players, and I know they've said, you know, they're really up for this game because it's the only one that's meant anything for the past number of months. But at the same time, I don't know if you can turn it on and off in isolation over a period of 5 or 6 months like that. And Owen Farrell's injury obviously compounds their woes a little bit. So, you know, I would have liked to see Sarries at full tilt against Leinster. But yeah, it's definitely a step up from the Pro 14. And like, Leinster are at a stage now where they're winning, well, I mean, they won 100% of their games in the Pro 14 this year, but they're comfortably expecting to win 80% of their games, even with a second string team. And some of the other Irish provinces probably aren't too far off that. So it probably doesn't speak great for the overall competitiveness of the league at the minute.
Yeah, it's not competitive, really, I guess, Donal, is it? I mean, from a Leinster perspective, it's certainly not.
I know. Look, I mean, we all know there's some horrible matches in the Pro 14. It's the Italian teams have struggled now. Treviso, to their credit, have come on in the past number of years. You know, the Dragons are sort of end up at the end of a lot of defeats throughout the season. And the whole thing has become a little bit unwieldy. I mean, we have a scenario now coming into the new season. Now that the last season's Pro 14 is now finished, we can talk about what's going to happen to it in this coming season. As of now, we don't even know. We know that the likes of the Cheetahs and the Southern Kings aren't competing in it. There is a suggestion that the four South African, the top franchises in South Africa, you know, the Lions, the Western Stormers, the Sharks, all who've been competing in Super Rugby for years, that they're going to come in, suggested after in January. Now, that begs the question, what's going to happen to the league between when it starts in October and January? But in the longer term, if that's to be the case, then I would welcome it. And I'd put up with a kind of a mismatch of a Pro 14 or Pro 12 as it is now, if we thought that the carrot was going to be there to get the real quality South African players, the guys who are playing for the Springboks, the guys who've been, packing out stadiums in Durban and in Newlands, as it was. So I think that would give the Pro 14 the lift that it needs. It badly needs something. But
do you, though, from the perspective of, I know we can only go on the basis of the Southern Kings and the Cheetahs, the experience that we've had over the last couple of seasons. But, you know, for supporters traveling to South Africa, I guess, to go and see teams play down there, if they are as expected to be kind of competitive sides there, is this the solution to kind of revive the Pro 14? Do you think this is the answer that they should be pursuing?
Yeah, I do. I think it'll make a massive difference. I mean, the bottom line is, when the Kings and the Cheetahs came in, the first year they came in, they came in on the back of a full Super Rugby season. So they were absolutely knackered. But they went straight out of one season and into another. So the first year was a write-off. Then what happened is all the best players that featured for them in that Pro 14 season ended up being drafted into the other franchises. Some of them were picked up by teams in the Pro 14. There was a couple of them went to Wales, a couple of them went to Glasgow. And as a consequence of that, they start off every season having to sort of reboot with a whole new squad. Whereas you're going to repeat, you're now going to replace what are very much the bottom two sides in South Africa with the top four sides, a lot of them packed with South African players. So, and with Springboks, quality Springboks. And I think they'll attract some of their overseas players home on the basis that Super Rugby killed an awful lot. The amount of travel that was involved, the time, the different time zones involved, it just wore out players. The players got fed up of it. And it's the same in Australia. All their players got fed up of traveling all over the world, and they found, look, I'm going to Europe. I'll be paid more money. I'll have a more manageable rugby season. Yes, I might miss out on international rugby, but from week to week and in terms of how I manage myself, it's a far more sustainable life than traveling all around the world in I think 11, is it 10 different time zones or something? It was ridiculous. Something had to happen. Australia and New Zealand have pulled out anyway, in that they want to go their own way. So South Africa are hanging there. I think they've had a desire to align themselves with European competition for the past 3 or 4 years. The pandemic, in a way, has accelerated something that was sort of festering away in the background. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops over the next 3 or 4 months.
Okay, so the Pro 14 then, Bernard, you know, the logistics of travel, South Africa, you know, fans, all that kind of stuff, that will pretty much look after itself as time goes on. But ultimately, the main point is here, if the best of South Africa comes into a Pro 14 league with the Irish provinces, you know, and what we have at Wales and Scotland, etc., that it will raise the standard of rugby than what we've seen for the last few seasons.
No, 100%. Like, those four franchises are superior in every way to the Cheetahs and the Kings, and they will add something to it. They're already full of Springboks. They're already full of quality players, really good academies, good crowd and fan bases. I mean, seeing some of the Irish teams go down and being down there with Dragons to play the Kings in a university pitch, I mean, with 40, 50 people there, like, it's mind-boggling how it's lasted so long. But, you know, you go to play in the Sharks, you know, in Durban, or Western Province, or the Stormers in Newlands, you know, while it's still standing, it's a completely different scenario. And I do think, I agree with Donal, I think it will give them the financial wherewithal to maybe bring back some Springboks. And, you know, Razzie will be all over that. I think he advises, or he's on the Pro 14 committee. It's going to give more revenue, less travel expenses. And I just think, look, at from a Welsh point of view, the Irish provinces are already, you know, competitive, but I think it might be the stimulus to potentially get the Welsh up and running again. And like, they don't really, the fans there haven't bought into this, the current standing or the current layout of the Pro 14. But maybe the Stormers, the Bulls, coming with Springboks might start to, you know, get a bit of reaction and traction. Because at the moment, that's the issue. I mean, we could handle... The Scots and Ferns have got their act together. Glasgow weren't as good this year, but they have been a competitive team. Edinburgh are on the right track. You know, the Scarlets, unfortunately, have dipped. The Ospreys were a great team. They've gone way down, but they're trying to rebuild under Toby Booth and trying to get some funding. You know, you can have two or three uncompetitive teams, but you can't have six or seven. And I think with those four, we would have those four, the four Irish provinces, the two Scottish teams. And I would like to think that at least two of the Welsh would get their act together, and then you've got a much better competition.
Yeah, it does seem, Wes, that all the raw materials are there for an improved Pro 14 or whatever it's going to be called when the South African sides come in. You just hope maybe that it would happen sooner rather than later. There seems to be a bit of an interim period here now, as Donal said, where there's uncertainty of what will happen. But if we knew in the short to medium term that this would be the case, it'd be something for fans and players to get excited about.
Yeah, definitely. No question, the four Super Rugby teams, obviously in a playing sense, are going to improve things massively. I suppose, you know, obviously, if you leave the politics out of it for a minute, there's probably a more logical fix in that the most obvious remedy to a lot of the ills in European rugby is probably a British and Irish league in a lot of ways. But, I mean, there's so many hurdles in the way of that happening. But, I mean, I think with the likes of CVC entering the equation, nothing's probably off the table. And, you know, the South African thing is concrete, so you wouldn't want to go back into the realm of pipe dreams again. But I think ultimately for rugby as an international sport and, you know, a logical one for the Pro 14, I've been saying it for years, is, you know, you'd love to get an American presence there at some point as well with the commercial opportunities that would bring. But unfortunately, you know, you need a bit of vision for that, and you probably need someone who's prepared to lose quite a bit of money before they expect to make it back. So that's more in the realm of pie in the sky, I suppose, than the South African solution.
What's your understanding of where American is, Bernard? Yeah,
on that view,
yeah.
Originally, before they took in the Kings and the Cheetahs, the plan was to go cross Atlantic and have a team in Canada and America, and I was chatting to some of the franchise owners, whatever, and one of them was, I met him with his wife, and he was willing to lose, or she was going to allow him to lose 15 million, which in their business plan would have lasted 5 years. But we know business plans for rugby teams, and it's based on to last 5 years, they were going to have an average gate of 8,000 at a game, like by year five. And I mean, this was a completely new stadium, completely new team. They had no idea what it would look like. So you need someone with deep pockets to fund that. But certainly, I agree, Wesley. Well, now with the MLR, maybe they're better off getting that up and running first. But it was certainly...
You've got the best almost, Bert. You wonder if the MLR was stable for 3 or 4 years, and that maybe the best of the MLR almost acted as a feeder team for one team that could enter across national competition, that would potentially be a way to work it, maybe.
100%. So I think from World Rugby point of view, from sponsors' point of view, Guinness getting into that American market is attractive. But I think the problem for Pro 14 at the moment is they gambled a little bit on the South Africa model with the two weaker teams. That hasn't worked. Now they just need to get a competition with teams that are guaranteed to be competitive, establish the league as a you know, a better product and a more consistent product. And in 5 or 6 years' time, then, when this is really strong, look at how we add to it.
What would be the... Go on, yeah, so, Tom, yeah.
Sorry, Hugh, but I think the key element here, or another key element, is the finances of it. I mean, obviously, with what's happening with the pandemic, all the unions are under massive financial pressure. But for a long time, the South African Union are pissed off at the fact that in the SANZAR competitions in Southern Hemisphere rugby, 68-69% of the revenues generated are coming out of South Africa. So there's a huge imbalance. I mean, New Zealand, we all know they're a massive rugby power, but commercially, they have very little to offer. So South Africa, for a long time, have been looking to align themselves with Europe because it just makes far more sense from a commercial perspective. So I think they'll end up doing better from it by coming into Europe. And the divvies, hopefully, for the likes of all the home unions would be better as well. So I think the American experiment has to be parked now for at least 3 or 4 years. Bring in the 4 South African franchises. That brings it up then. You lose the 2. You go back to a Pro 12 for a while. Then you go to a Pro 16. So you have 2 conferences of 8. You have 2 of the South African franchises in one conference, 2 in the other. You let that build. In the meantime, I think the American experiment is worth it. But I've seen it from a club perspective. I know a number of players from the All-Ireland League who've gone over to America. We've 3 or 4 from our own club who've gone over there. And it's so haphazard. They never know. I mean, the visa scenario is not straightforward. A lot of them have been left short of money. There's uncertainty throughout as to what's happening over there. So I think an American team, they have a long way to go before we could even contemplate bringing them into European competition.
Is a Pro 16 with the South African size that you mentioned coming in, is that an attractive proposition for subscription, pay-per-view television, whatever it be, Sky Sports, BT, Premier, whatever you want to wrap it up? But as, do you think, Donald, that that is an attractive financial proposition for them?
I think it is, but I think, look, we have to be careful. There's talk, like Wes has mentioned CVC. I mean, they're not coming into this for the good of their health. They're buying up equity stakes in every league across the world with a view to building it up and sell it all off in 4 or 5 years' time. We have to be careful that rugby, that all of rugby doesn't go behind a paywall. We've seen that happening, that what happened with cricket in England. I think you have to have a balance. Otherwise, it just becomes too expensive. You need a wider audience. And if you're trying to attract the level of sponsorship in that as well, you're going to have to expand your audience base. So, look, I think it's inevitable that, of course, there will be a pay-per-view involved. But if you can, you'd have so many games there. There must be an avenue there for terrestrial television to keep it live, keep it available, keep it in front of people on a weekend basis.
Absolutely. Do we know Martin Annoy's position, Bernard, in terms of how long he plans to stay in the role? Is he comfortable there? And is he going to be the key figure here negotiating whatever this rights deal might be, and equally with the South African sides of bringing them in on a permanent basis?
I think he's going to be a key figure, yeah. I don't know how long. Obviously, he's come from World Rally. Big part of his remit was expansion, was to get funding, better TV deals. We know, you know, they went with Premier Sports. I'm not sure how long more that's got, but, you know, with a view to proving to other TV channels that they can bring the subscribers with them. So, yeah, I think his role has been very much on a commercial point of view to try and get the funding in to develop the league. I suppose, you know, strategy-wise, the best way of getting funding in is to make it more competitive, and the best way to make it more competitive is to get better teams. So I do think that the 4 South Africans, look, it's going to happen. You know, it's the only show in town for South Africans. It's the only show in town for the Pro 14 in terms of, you know, making it better. So it's just a case of how quickly we can get it done. And I suppose not trying to compromise this season too much. So it's quite a complicated scenario. So the latest rumor I heard was that we would have some format of a competition until January 1st. And obviously the fixtures got leaked for that, which would be a Pro 12 effectively. And then obviously potentially we end up with a Pro 16 for the second half of the season. So it's going to be quite difficult to get a fair way of adjudicating who goes into playoffs, etc. But I suppose for long-term health of the game and for something that's feasible on a medium-term to long-term basis, I think it's worth putting up with for 1 year to get it right long-term.
Right, and Wes, this is the key point here. Look, we're in the middle of a pandemic still. Sport, as we know it, has been completely turned on its head. We can absolutely forgive the Pro 14, Pro 16, a bit of betting in time to adapt to the current situation, also to try and bring in the South African size and make something that will be kind of sustainable over the short to medium term and from next season, if you like. A short gap solution right now has to be found, and whatever way they find it, let's just get rugby back on and let's keep playing.
Yeah, absolutely. And Birch mentioned how odd it was to play in front of 50 spectators down in South Africa last year. We'd love 50 spectators for the last couple of weeks, but
yeah,
I mean, all you can do is, it's an unusual situation, and you could take the view that it's, I suppose, give people time to address some of these issues that have been festering in the background. Part of me thinks maybe that because of the lack of activity that was going on, you know, sometimes people's imaginations run away with them when they've nothing to occupy themselves with too. And, you know, you have to be careful not to go too far into tampering for tampering's sake. But yeah, I mean, if some of the more obvious things can be addressed, why not?
Just in terms of the Irish provinces then, before we talk about this weekend and Saracens, Ulster obviously playing Toulouse as well. We have a situation now, Donald, where, I mean, we touched on the problems at Munster last week on the podcast and potentially some solutions there that requires bringing younger players through. But equally, you look at Leinster now. We'll just focus on Leinster and how successful they've been. The squad strength and depth that they've built up, they're four or five players nearly much in every position that can come in, seamlessly hit seams, regardless of the opposition. And you just wonder, you know, where the future for Irish provincial rugby lies. And I'm saying this because you look at the Ulster side with, you know, six or seven former Leinster players who are now the mainstay of the Ulster side. You look at Munster and some of the players that they have had to take in as well on direction of David Nusafour and the IRFU. Connacht similarly as well. Players switching around, mostly from Leinster, who are deemed surplus to requirements and finding a new home in Irish rugby for the benefit of Irish rugby. But at what cost here? And the cost seems to be a bit of a dilution in terms of the entity that is the Munster brand, the entity that might be the Ulster brand of years gone by, and equally in Connacht as well. Do we want a situation where Leinster's surplus are just automatically transferred around the provincial system for the benefit of Irish rugby on the one hand, but equally at a cost of local identification and with supporters buying into what their team and their province represents? Is that the best thing for Irish rugby right now?
Well, look, I think that's the inevitable fallout with professional sport. I mean, how many fellas from Manchester play for Manchester United or Manchester City? The bottom line is, I'd rather see Irish players playing with Irish provinces than bringing in a whole cohort of fellas from overseas. Leinster are hugely successful what they do for all kinds of reasons, as we've mentioned before. 52 players playing across the Pro 14 this season alone, with a whole plethora of players coming through. We know from, you know, every Ireland under 20 squad that's announced, it could be 30 players, but usually 15 or 16 of those are from Leinster. That is a byproduct of the school system and everything that we've spoken about before. But I mean, I think, look, it would be terrible to see us losing those homegrown Irish players to England or to France, and then they become unavailable to the national team. I'd far prefer to see them take their chances in other provinces. I think the beauty now is, where up to maybe 3 or 4 years ago, players from Leinster were reluctant to go to any other province. Now they do see it as a genuine opportunity of projecting themselves and pushing themselves forward for international honours. That has to be good for Irish rugby. And bear in mind, the whole system in Ireland, it's a pyramid system, with everything, the top of the pyramid is the international team. We know that all the finances are generated by the international team. So we have to have a system in Ireland where the best players are funneled up to the top. And the more competition you have, the better. Look, as a Munster man, I would love to get to a scenario where every Munster team that takes to the pitch has at least 10 players who are homegrown. And I think that still has to be an aspersion for all the provinces. But as a backup to that, I would hate to see our best players leaving the country because of a reluctance to play in other provinces.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And I guess, Bernard, there is another argument to say that it's a terrible pity that the provinces, in accepting players from different teams, are diluting their identity, are diluting, you know, what it is that they stand for. And I don't want to get into utopian situation here, pie in the sky stuff. You know, I understand the practicalities of modern rugby, professional rugby. But as Donal said, there has to be a balance there, does there not? You know, you can't just, from Munster, dilute what it is that Munster have been and have always been and represent, just to take in players and fill spots in. You must try and marry the two. Is that possible, do you think?
I think it's possible. I was interested. I spoke to Darren Cave at the weekend, and he said how important it was to have Henderson back as that kind of old, even though he's young, old school, spiritual, you know, Ulster man as captain. And I think it's not really the number. There's no exact number. It's the quality and leadership of the leadership and what the homegrown players represent. So you could have a team with 10 ex-Leinster players and 5 ex-Munster players. But if those 5 ex-Munster players are very strong at, I suppose, passing on the heritage and the history and having their own unique identity that's tied into where they're from, and the ex-Leinster players buy into that, well, then you have a chance. But, you know, Leinster, if all the other problems has just become Leinster light, you know, with the fellas who can't make it going there, I mean, no one will catch Leinster. You have to... You know, you can bring them in, but you have to find a unique way of attacking it. And too much admiration for Leinster is only going to help Leinster go forward. And it's all well and good to respect them and say, you know, look, they're a really good side, understand what they do really well. But you have to find reasons why you can beat them as well. I'm talking about from the other player's point of view. And I think what Leinster are doing at the moment, they're doing it very well, is they're getting inside the mind of everybody else. And so, like, Ulster left Viva last weekend completely deflated, you know, feeling they're further away from catching Leinster than they were, you know, a year ago in the quarterfinal. Munster couldn't have left the Aviva in the semi after the semi-final feeling they were closer. And that's, you know, either Ulster and Munster reacted in a really positive way and try and create a plan to get closer and pass them out, or they just accept, oh, they're too good, they've got so many things in their favour. And then Leinster can actually not even go forward anymore, just stay where they are. And it's a really dangerous one. I agree with Donal, Irish players, it's better to see them stay in Ireland. But I do think the ideal scenario is that Connacht have their own, you know, unique identity, Munster and Ulster. And anyone that goes there, you know, buys into that completely and becomes part of it. So you look at Tyburn going to the Scarlets, for example, you know, the culture in the Scarlets at the time was really strong. They had a, you know, a very strong identity with West Wales and the Welsh language and the way they played, etc. And he flourished in that and he bought into it, you know. And that's the key, I think, is that. And but that came from Ken Owens and John Davies and the senior players there. So that's what we need. We need the senior players in Ulster, Munster, and Connacht to make sure whoever comes in, you know, are very strongly aligned to where they want to go as a province and where they're coming from.
And it's also very important, Wes, is not that the coaches understand what it is that the province represents and the identity of province. I mean, you had a situation where Pat Lang came into Connacht and he transformed their self-belief because he bought into where he was. He bought into what Connacht represented. And I guess the differences that stood out as being positives for Connacht rugby. I'm looking at, you know, the Munster coaching setup at the moment. Van Graan, he's quite softly spoken. You know, obviously Larkham has just come in there, Roundtree, you know, who seems to have done more than most maybe to buy into what it is Munster represent. The players can only do so much. It's important that the right coaching ticket understands as well how to keep that identity alive and transfer to the players.
Yeah, obviously it is. And when Bernard was talking about the Scarlets, Pat Lamb was the first thing that actually jumped into my head and how he kind of embraced that kind of West of Ireland identity. But I think it's important beyond the coaches that the people, even appointing coaches and shepherding the health of the organisation in a more long-term way than a coach who's, by their very nature, can be quite transient, that they're understanding the need to put the right coaches in, not just from the rugby perspective, but from all those holistic ways. But I do wonder, and I suppose the first one that kind of, to me, I think the first time that the dominance of Leinster players started to become apparent was probably, if you think back to when Jack McGrath got his first caps. At the time, Jack McGrath wasn't first choice in Leinster. Now, he became first choice, and he became first choice for Ireland, and he's been a great player for both. But I remember it was quite strange at the time that Dave Kilcoyne was starting for Munster, and a reserve from Leinster was now being picked for Ireland ahead of him. Up to that point, there had always been a kind of a logic of you have to be starting for your province. Now, obviously, the games change into more of a 23-man game, etc. But I suppose from there on, and no coincidence that Joe was in Leinster and then in Ireland, we've seen more and more of this and squads dominated by one team. And I would have a slight fear. I get what Donald says, and I'd agree with him about it's better to have Irish players playing and, you know, it's professional sport and all the rest of it. But I wonder, kind of almost unwittingly, did the IRFU at some point realise and become comfortable with the notion that going forward, if all else fails, we'll have an Irish team and four Irish professional club teams that are made up of 80% of players from the greater Dublin region. And, you know, I'm not trying to be biased about this, but that isn't a good solution going forward. That isn't, that will ultimately eat itself in terms of people will stop. Like rugby already struggles with stereotypes and a kind of a niche appeal in certain parts of the country. So
yeah,
that's actually something that has a commercial knock on and all sorts of things. So I get the appeal of right now, Joey Carberry needs to play more games at 10, so I'll let him go to Munster, and it works for Munster and it works for Ireland. But I don't think that in mass that is a sensible approach in the long term. And it's certainly not great with average players. I think if someone clearly needs games and clearly needs, it's for the benefit of the Irish team that a particular position is exposed, that's one thing. But I think if you're at the situation where you're bringing in a third or fourth choice player from another province, you know, not to cast aspersions on anyone, but I prefer the best scrum half in the AIL plays with Munster as a third choice scrum half than bringing Nick McCarthy down from Leinster in some ways. If he's not going to play or be on the bench, well, why not go with the homegrown guy for a third or fourth choice position?
Donald?
Yeah, look, there's a lot to be said for that, but be absolutely clear in your own head, Wes. David Nusafora, as director of rugby with the IRFU, all he wants is the provinces to be competitive at the competitions they're playing in. But as long as Ireland are successful and competing ranked in the top three or four in the world, finishing one or two in the Six Nations, that's generating the money. As far as he's concerned and the RFU is concerned, that's fulfilling their role. Where you have to detach yourself. Like, for years, the debate was going on. You remember the chat shows and the comments and various things for years. But this animosity between Munster and Leinster was at its worst. I mean, thankfully, yeah, those days seem to be gone a bit. But, like, you had Munster people coming out saying, oh, you know what I mean? Is it better for Munster to win the Heineken Cup than Ireland winning the Six Nations? And, of course, a local team, you want to see them as successful as possible. But I think, look, I agree more with than anyone that you have to represent where you come from. And this whole, you know, we spoke about it last week, this DNA that's specific to Munster. But I think Munster, they have to get their own act together. And again, we said the school system in Leinster is fantastic and it produces all these players and that's great. We don't have that in Munster. Therefore, we have to have a different system. The system that we've had for years is club rugby. So we're going to have to work with the clubs and the schools better than we're doing now. But, you know, you have a Munster branch that at times are at loggerheads. I still find it incredible down here that we have a South Munster branch and a North Munster branch. Like, we have two divisions within Munster automatically. And that creates issues in the level below the professional sport, which in my view has a knock on in terms of the developments of players within the province. So Munster have to get their own act together before we can start cribbing and casting aspersions and saying we don't want fellas from other provinces. It's the easy solution. And I agree with Wes that there are guys coming in from other provinces filling in positions three and four, with guys within who are equally as good. So there, but it's up to Munster to promote those and to identify the players that Wes is talking about.
How do you resolve the conflict at board level then, Donald? I mean, how do you get parties to sit down and move forward in the best interest of Munster rugby and put aside whatever separation or division that there is there already. It sounds like...
Well, you see, to be fair, sorry, at board level, I think Munster have done extremely well. Again, we spoke about this last week. They identified an issue with coaching 2 or 3 years ago, and they've brought in now some of the most experienced coaches around. We spoke about them being short 2 or 3 world-class players. They dipped deep and got Snaven and Dealand this year. So I think the professional board are doing their job. It's perhaps they don't appreciate, and even the coaches, you see, you've coaches who've come in from outside. I mean, if I would be critical of Van Graan, I don't think I've ever seen him at an All-Ireland League game. I saw Rob Penny and Simon Mannix, who were part of the management team, at loads of AIL games, at least make some effort to connect with the club scene within the province. Even if it's only for semantic reasons, but you might find Rob Penny discovered, that number one, that the standard wasn't quite as bad as he thought. Number two, that there was a lot of reasonable players out there with a bit of work could be developed onto the next level. But unfortunately, it's one of the products, again, of professional sport. Van Graan is in the third year in Munster. He is obviously under pressure now. I mean, a lot of your solutions become short-term, whereas working in behind that, and again, I think this is where Leinster have a brilliant structure. Leo Cullen is really a director of rugby, and nobody understands Leinster rugby better than him. And he fully understands that the school system, in his mind, probably works better than the club. They don't need the clubs as much in Leinster as Munster do. And as Ulster, Ulster had this problem where they had no team in Division 1A of the All-Ireland League. And the Ulster Professional Board and their clubs came together to work for the betterment of Ulster rugby. Ballinahinch then got up to 1A. They struggled to stay there, but thankfully are still there at the moment. The academy worked far closer with the clubs in Ulster than it had ever before. And it's starting to bear fruit in that there are now some good quality Ulster players coming through their academy. So it's a question of getting balance. But as we've said before, there is no one fit that suits everyone. And therefore, we shouldn't all be trying to replicate what Leinster do because they do it better than anybody else.
Equally, Bernard, I don't think for one second there is a single Leinster player or fan who thinks that the dominance that Leinster hold at the moment in terms of the other Irish provinces is good for Leinster. I mean, it can't be because, you know, they want to be challenged, they want to grow, they want to better themselves. And if they're finding life too easy in a Pro 14 final against Ulster or against Munster, indeed in a semi-final, despite what the scoreline might suggest, it can't be good for the players there to develop and to get better, can it?
I think, no, unfortunately at the moment, and this sounds maybe arrogant or whatever, but I think that Leinster, in some games, not the Ulster are still competitive, Munster made it hard for them, but sometimes they get harder training sessions on a Tuesday than they do in a Pro 14 game. That's just the nature of, we saw their second string play Ulster, you know, 3 weeks ago and comprehensively beat them. And that's the problem for Munster and Ulster in that, when they train against their second string, they're very rarely put under massive pressure. So they only get a chance to learn. You'll hear about coaches and players saying, oh, you know, we learned we can't do that against a team like Leinster. We can't do that against a team like Claremont because of their power. But you only learn it 3 or 4 times a year. So Ulster now, okay, they've got a hard game against Toulouse this weekend. But after that, they mightn't play a first-choice Leinster team again, you know, for a long time. Whereas Leinster, if you look at how they've changed their game plan, etc., they are able to find things that work and don't work on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, which is phenomenal for them. So that's the challenge. So they only need to be getting better. They don't care if they're getting better on a Saturday or a Tuesday, or they're not necessarily worried too much about Ulster. Leinster fans aren't worried about Ulster, Munster, or Connacht. They're very much only focused on Leinster. But that's the challenge. So, you know, Ulster's game plan to play against Leinster, yeah, they got a great try early doors. They needed 4 things to go wrong from a Leinster point of view for them to score. And after that, I mean, they were punch drunk because Leinster were able to just take it out of them. And at the end, at the end, it was demoralizing for them. But that's because they're not used to training at that intensity, because the opposition aren't good enough for them. And that's a massive advantage for Leinster. There's no easy solution to that. But I think Leinster won't be too worried about anyone else. They'll be just worried about being able to back up a Pro 14 now with a European title. And that's, and again, I massively admire Leinster. That's not easy. You only need one little dip in performance against the top teams to get cut out.
Okay, this weekend, Leinster play Saracens Donegal. We know that Owen Farrell won't be available. It looks like Alex Goode will deputise and switch from full-back to fly half, where he did it a couple of times last year. We've got a Toji coming in there, Vunipola as well. I know Owen Farrell is out. I know Saracens have well-documented problems off the pitch over the last few months. But, you know, make no mistake, they'll be here to throw down to Leinster, and this will not be an easy match for them.
No, it won't be. I mean, we all know that, you know, with all the hassle they've had, which they've brought upon themselves over the past number of months, they haven't had a competitive match. They've had no match that has mattered really since last March or April. Their whole focus, once they qualified, they started out, they thought they'd be able to, despite the fact they were docked initially 35 points in the Premiership, their focus then became to remain in the Premiership. They started out the pool stages of the Champions Cup almost playing their seconds team, and yet they still qualified. But now that carrot has sustained them. The carrot of playing Leinster in a quarter final has actually sustained them over the lockdown and over the past number of months. We know, look, they're not the Saracens team that beat Leinster last year. On my reckoning, with Owen Farrell suspended, they'll be missing 10 players who were involved in the match day 23 and the final in Newcastle last week. There's a suggestion that Mako Vunipola might be out, even though he seems to be winning his fitness battle. If that was the case, you're talking about 11 players. Yet, they still have a hard core of players who are capable of beating Leinster. Emotionally, I think there's a movement behind them because it is the end of the Saracens, as they've known. A lot of the players have left either permanently or on loan for 12 months. You have people like Brad Barrett, who captained them through so much success over the years. Europe is the only thing left for him. So I think they'll have an emotional energy going into this game that'll certainly make it far more competitive than anything Leinster have faced over the past 12 months since that final in Newcastle. And the other key element, as Bert alluded to, mentally, I think Leinster know they had the edge over most teams. But Saracens, even despite the fact that they're missing those 9 or 10 key players, still have sufficient quality. Fellas like Itoja, fellas like the Vunipola brothers, Wigglesworth at scrum half. They still have sufficient quality that I think they will ask questions of Leinster. Now, that said, the loss of Farrell is huge. I was looking there. Alex Goode, as we know, is a fullback by nature. He has played in the past. I think he played 4 Premiership games in 2014 at OHA. He played 3 in 2015. And last year, I think he played 2. One of them being the quarterfinal against Glasgow. That he was only subbed up in the morning of the quarterfinal because Owen Farrell's wife was having a baby. So, like, we know he's a brilliant player, but you're asking somebody to run a show at 10 at the top level. So, I mean, it's a massive ask. But that said, I think that they'll give Leinster a serious game.
I think it's, you know, we're looking at Leinster here and the talent that Saracens still have, Bernard, and the ability that they have to come to the Aviva and put on a bit of a show. Mm-hmm. How Leinster manage the game is going to be absolutely critical, is it not? Game management, playing in the right spots at the right times in the game, and not to allow Saracens, who are here on a bit of a free shot, as I said, the last hurrah before they go down to the second division, we don't hear from them for a long, long time. They're going to give it everything, and how Leinster control the game would probably be crucial in determining the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Leinster will admit that they spent a huge amount of time reviewing that final and how the game, you know, got away from them. And it's credit to Saracens and respect Leinster have that they've remodeled their game a little bit on them without being as probably as focused on the box kicking as Saracens are. But I looked at, look, they've done quite well in the Premiership so far, given they're nothing to play for, and they've rotated their team. They're playing with a lot of spirit. But, I mean, they're probably, if Mako plays, their pack would be Mako, Jamie George, Vincent Koch, Callum Hunter-Hill, Mario Toje, Jackson Ray, Billy Bonapola and Michael Rhodes. I mean, that's a quality side. And then, you know, if you have Wiggleworth and Brad Barrett, Sean Maitland, etc. So I think they are a challenge. They're a team who kind of unite. They're very strong, very strong spirit. And for them to come to Dublin and pull off a shock would be, they talk about making memories, and that's what they're built on. It's not about trophies, it's about making memories. And I think it could be, you know, a final sting from them for this season, this squad, even though it's changed a little bit, to go and pull off a big shock. So it's definitely a challenge. But you just think Leinster, the worst Irises are weaker now is their bench. You know, they managed to keep a very strong team together for obviously the championship, but they have lost, you know, 10 or 12 players who would make most teams match 23. And that's where maybe they're going to be, you know, weaker than Leinster. And I think that'll tell. But it'll still be a fascinating game just to see how Leinster, I suppose, play against them, given how Saracens have caused them trouble in the past.
And just to play, Donald, you know, we presume Sexton will come back in for Ross Byrne. Ross Byrne did very well last weekend. Who would you start at seven? Josh van der Fleer got man of the match, and you've Connors coming back in to potentially do a job on Billy Vunipola. Who gets the nod for you in that back row, do you think?
I think when you look at the way Leinster prepared for the past 3 or 4 weeks, I think they've had Will Connors in their minds for this game all along. So I would stick with that. I mean, van der Fleer is a super player. He had a great game last week. But Connors impresses me every time I see him. I think there's a great balance to that Leinster back row. Keelan Dorris now has taken ownership. He is, in my view, the number one in their back row at the moment. I think you'd see Jack Conan at 8 and Connors back at 7. But Leinster, you know, having the capacity to have someone like van der Fleer on the bench, you're looking at maybe, again, having to exclude Max Deegan, who was captain the Six Nations only a couple of months ago. So look, it's a great problem for Leo Cullen to have. It is an issue for Saracens now in that, you know, I agree with Birch, the pack that he named there was the Saracens pack that I had penciled in. But like, they had the facility for the final of Vincent Cock, who was, you know, on the bench for South Africa in the World Cup, an outstanding tight end. They were only bringing him on in the last 30 minutes because they had Lima Sotelli, the USA tight head. They don't have that quality and depth, but I wouldn't underestimate the players that are in there that we wouldn't know as well. Again, I know it was a seconds, but Saracens seconds played Exeter seconds last weekend. The Saracens, they were outstanding. But it was the energy, I think, more than the performance that I was impressed with. And that is an energy that's obviously permeating within their club at the moment. Like Birch is talking about on a Tuesday, Leinster's first against Leinster's second is probably harder than a lot of Pro 14 games. I think the whole motivation within Saracens and a unity of purpose with younger players and older players, everything they've done in the Premiership over the past number of months has been geared towards Saturday. The last time they put their team out was about 3 weeks ago. They hockeyed London Irish. They got 3 mall tries. They were really strong all over the field. So if they start... And another factor is, like, Leinster finished first seed. They get the home draw. But there's nobody at the match. So you're taking the emotional energy of the crowd out of the game. And Saracens don't have a huge crowd to start with. So that obviously, that has to be work more in Saracens' favour than in Leinster's, having an empty stadium. So I think so much will depend on how the game develops over the first 20 minutes, half an hour. I mean, if you're Leinster, you think you're going to look to put as much pressure on the likes of Billy Vunipola, who I don't think has played as well over the last 9 months. I don't think he had a good World Cup for England, despite the fact that they got to the final. But also you feel they're going to have to do everything to close down and put as much pressure on Alex Good as they can, because the backup for him is another Vunipola, the two lads' first cousin, Manu, who was on the England under-20 side that we covered last year. So they don't have that strength in the key positions. But I think it's going to be a fascinating contest.
It is. Okay, lads. Looking forward to it. We will review it next week on the podcast. My thanks to Donald, to Bernard and to Wes, to Raf Diallo, who produced today. And we are back with the RTÉ Rugby Podcast next Wednesday. Until then, take care.